Wesley, brother. What is it? Vivian, what is it? Vivian, what Bam Wyatt's
party? You're right. Wes Vivian Wyatt. Yeah.
Yeah. Wes Vivian, whatever. You know, whatever it is. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you. And I got to tell you see this smile on my face?
I see it.
I every time we talk to this gentleman, Mr. Ben Gay III, I can't help but smile because number one, he's awesome. Number two, he's a great friend. But three, I just know this is going to be a great podcast.
It always is. And you know what? Usually, almost every podcast we do, I'll make a few notes, some more than others. I mean, as far as prior to the show, pre-show, like who are they? Some questions I want to ask, where are we, the direction, some more than others. I write nothing for Ben because I don't care where we go.
Right.
I mean, we could talk, we could do an hour long podcast every day of the week for the rest of our lives and not run out of stories with this guy. I mean, it's truly amazing. And, you know, we've already kind of decided that he likes us, so we don't need to blow too much smoke, I suppose, but, it is an amazing, and did you get the text I just sent you?
I did. And, yes. And when I got it, I thought the same thing, you know, we were talking to, and by the way, Ben, just so you know, it said, holy wow. I don't know if you meant to put cow or wow, but
oh, did
either
I say
one
cow?
Worked.
No, and, I, you know, I said, no, oh, I said, Ben looks like, no, I did not.
But, you know, we were talking to Scott McCain the other day and yes. he was talking about, his, friendship with, Glenn Morshower, the actor, yep. That is, you know, incredible actor. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know Glenn Morshower, but we know Ben Gay.
That's right.
You know, and that is me just amazing.
It is amazing. So, well, rather than us, who nobody cares, really.
That's right.
Let's go get the living legend himself, Mr. Gay on. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
Let's do it. All right.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt. Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins. Now, let's get to the show.
Recognize those? You know anybody that did those?
I am vaguely familiar.
Yeah. And I did say holy wow, by the way, not cow. I would have said steer if I meant that. How you doing, my friend? You doing well?
I'm doing fine. Good to see both of you.
Oh, man.
Been looking forward to this. Oh, and there's my favorite book.
That is. I like that book.
It's my bank's favorite book.
I'll bet it is. You know, and then they're important. You know, I was telling you a story off air, or pre-show, and I'm going to start with that because I think that was a great segue. Is I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, I follow everything you do, and I said, I appreciate that. They said, you seem to have become really close with and good friends with Ben Gay III. And I said, yes. I said, I'm blessed. You know, he's a friend, a brother, a pal, a mentor, everything. And they said, that's just amazing. Says, you know, we have his book, several of them, but the Closers One, and when we hire new salespeople, that's one of the things we want them to read. I said, you did read that. That's for the hot. You got the warning up there, right? You got to kind of know what you're doing. He says, yeah, but he says we want him to get it right from the master himself, right from the get go. And he said, so the other day I come downstairs and a couple of new guys, like 19 and 20. And he said, they're sitting there. He said, and they got the book open like this, just page after page and taking notes. So after all these years, it's making an influence and an impact, Ben. That's all I wanted to say. So.
Yeah, Dr. Hill used to tell me that he wasn't concerned. I guess he was resigned to the fact. He said, my work and I will not be long remembered or something like that. And I saw Dr. Hill trying to be nice, but I was thinking, well, that's possible. Time marches on.
Yep.
But he died 55 years ago, and I talk about Dr. Hill and Think and Grow Rich in particular more than I ever did back mm-hmm. when I was working with him. And we were setting up a company, Mentoring Dynamics, to train people to be little Dr. Napoleon Hills to match the format of several of our other training companies. And he died on me. So I backed off of it, to say the least. I backed off of it over 50 years. And now I'm using the term again, mentoring dynamics, in tribute to him. But I'm astounded at the staying power. And I've thought about that a little bit. As you get older, you think about your legacy somewhat. And it's going to be a long, having sold 10 and a half million copies of that book when we quit counting 30 years ago. It was a thing where I didn't trust the numbers anymore. I'd been away from the business for 6 years. So I said, let's just stop. 10.5 million, we can prove in the story. And then the closers parts 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and so on. And the one you guys are about to get serious about writing, 7, has run the numbers up, whatever. And my name is on all of them. In many of them, other people did most of the work, as you guys are going to do, but at least my name will be on the front. So if you have millions of books out there, I picture some archaeologists digging through rubble someday and saying, Ben Gay, that's an interesting name. And I go, yes, I reached semi-immortality.
There you go.
Well, it's hard to kill them all.
Yeah, it is. It is. And usually they try to have a book burning. There's some that's going to, I mean, there's some that'll survive, right? I mean,
that's right.
Oh, that's good stuff.
One of the first things with Dr. Hill, I may have told you this before, he walked into our living room at our home in Marin County. And my wife at the time, Marcia, she's since passed away, had put a copy of Think and Grow Rich on the coffee table, aimed where it would be right in his line of sight as he stepped down and went in the living room. And I said, oh, look, trying to cover. Oh, look, Dr. Hill, a copy of Think and Grow Rich. You know, trying to look as sincere as I could. Mm-hmm. It's not like we sat around cross-legged on the floor every night and read it as a family. but we loved it. Yep. Yeah, I said, how does it feel? Because they used to say, I don't know if it was true then or now, but they used to say Think and Grow Rich in English-speaking countries was second only to the Bible in sales. Mm. And I said, how does it feel to have written one of the best-selling books of all time? He said, best-selling, least read. He had a real understanding of, you know, people have intentions and they buy books and they do this and they go to the seminar and they make goals and so on. But frequently they don't act on them. I've been in people's offices and I've seen the closers, one of the books, and I go over and pick it up. First time it's ever been cracked.
Is that right?
And they're saying, oh, I love that book. I say, you get more out of it if you open it.
That's a thought. maybe we should start a new thing in the world of book publishing where we put, you get more out of it if you open the book, dummy. Right? Yeah. What do you think? I'm just a thought. You know?
It's like my diet book I'm going to write someday. It's going to be called Eat Less.
Yes, that's it.
And then blank pages.
I love that. I love that. Just open it up. And see, that would be funny. And, you know, a lot of people would buy that just for the novelty of nothing else of having it on the table, right?
Sure. Jim Rohn always said he was going to write a book about health and so on. And it was to say, what I want you to do right now is put down this book and do 20 push-ups or whatever it was, and then come back to the book. You turn the page, it said, did you do them? If not, give this book to someone who will.
I love it. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, man. That's a great one. Yeah, it's so important that what you just said, Ben, is the do it. Because I have all these books behind me and drawers full of books. And as you noticed pre-show, I went and grabbed yours right off the very top because that's where they are for a lot of reasons. That I value them that much, but I value our friendship that much that's where they stay no matter what. If I get new books, they pile up and Ben goes on top. But I've read every book I have there, or at least a very serious skimming. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't, if an author that maybe is going to jump on the podcast or just somebody I met or whatever, if they give me a book, send me a book, I buy their book, however I get their book, I have enough to look smart behind me on a podcast, right? Mm-hmm. I don't need that. It does no good to go, well, I got this book from Dave Sanderson, but yet I never read what he says, right? That's yeah. I might as well buy a comic book, right? So I think you're right, and that plays into everything in life, doesn't it? We read things, we listen to posts, we listen to YouTubes, and we do all this stuff, and then we don't do anything with it too many times.
It's that's the breakdown. You know, you get again, Jim Rohn used to say, he'd do a seminar, and he understood this how temporary the results from a seminar are when you're whipped into a frenzy and so on. Most people, the seminar will last all the way out to the parking lot at the hotel when they discover the new dent in their film, in their fender.
Yeah.
And then all the motivation goes away. But he said his favorite was people would come up to him and say, you know, this is my 10th seminar that I've been to for you, Mr. Owen. And he said, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And my family appreciates that. However, if you had done what I told you in the first seminar, you wouldn't have to go to 10.
Yeah.
And then he said that what I really dislike is somebody comes up to me with a copy of Think and Grow Rich under one arm and How I Found Friends, How to Influence Friends and People on the other, jumping up and down. I am excited. I'm excited. And Jim would say, after a while, you got to quit jumping up and down, put the books down, and do something.
Yeah. So, no truer words, right?
Yeah. And Dr. Hill, the message, most people don't realize it, but Think and Grow Rich was written to be a sales book, a sales training book. That's what he had in mind. The fact it broke out of that and became a philosophy book surprised him as much as anybody. But I said, and he said, they're all looking for the deep meaning. And he said, the deep meaning I wrote, and I forget the number, 27 times or whatever in the book, take action, which was his first great lesson to me. Ben, you're dithering. Take action.
Yeah. Yes. I love that story that you've told it numerous times with us, whether we were together in Sacramento or on podcast. I love that story about how he told you to quit dithering. What did he say? Ben, you're dithering or quit?
Yeah. It was the fourth or fifth meeting he had been to, and he wasn't there all the time. He came out once a month or whatever he felt like doing. But it was the fourth or fifth meeting he'd been to on a new men's line we were coming out with called High Tides Men's Cosmetic Line, which was cutting edge at the time. Right. The men's cosmetic business at that time was Aqua Velva and Old Spice. No moisturizing creams or anything. Right. So he's now attending his fourth or fifth meeting, which he told me later seemed very much like the first meeting he'd attended on the same subject. So when they all got up and left, I had a big boardroom table as my desk, and his spot was down to my left on the end. When they all got up and left, he said, and agreed to meet next Thursday. He said at the same time, he said, Ben, what are you going to know next week that you don't know this week? I said, well, I'm not sure. He said, what do the others need to know? I said, well, the art department has got it laid out. We've named it and everything. He said, Ben, you're dithering. Take action. So I buzzed my trusty secretary, executive assistant, who really ran Holiday Magic Cosmetics. And I said, Marty, gather them back up. And she did. And I said, okay, folks, what do you need to know that you don't know now to do your share of it? Nothing, 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 you know, around the table. I said, okay, let's pull the trigger. And I don't know, a month later, we had a line out distributed nationally, quickly, internationally, a little bit slower because we had translations to do. Mm-hmm. And we did millions of dollars in business with just that line that we could have been doing for the previous 6-8 months, whatever it was. But I catch myself from time to time, even now. And I go, okay, sorry, Dr. Hill, I'm dithering.
Yeah. And that's such a great lesson because, I've learned and I still am not good enough at it and probably will never be good enough at it. But I've got better at the taking action. You know, I always wanted to be so prepared and then prepare more and then prepare some more. And I found myself, like you just said, if it's a new product launch, right? How much do I really need to know to go launch the damn product, right? I need to know certain things and understand it and believe it. And if I know there's a need for it and a reason for it, I'll figure out the crap I don't know on the way. At some point, right? I need, because I'm never going to figure it all out. You know, when you're figured out, and I know you'll agree with this, is when a customer asks me something I don't know. I guess I should figure that one out, shouldn't I?
Yeah, and put that on the top of the list. Right.
But, you know, I've become very good at, and I try to be less good at it because I don't want to do that all the time. But it's a great lesson learned when a customer asks you something you don't know. But the best answer, and I didn't used to do this as a young sales guy, is I would start doing what I thought all good salespeople does, which is dazzling with bullshit, right? And as I got older, I started realizing the best answer to that is, you know, Ben, that's a great question, and I'm embarrassed to tell you, but I don't know. But I'll tell you what I'll do.
I'll find out.
I'll find out, and I'll get you the honest answer. Is tomorrow good enough, right? Yep. And people respect that because – And in today's world, especially with internet and with all the Google searches and all the AI, if we don't think that customer probably knows about as much as we know, you better assume they do, right? Because so dazzling with BS now is even tougher than it was, you know, 15, 18, 20, 30 years ago. So you better be on your A game if you're going to start trying to do the dazzling thing, right? So
somebody had asked me a question one day. I remember right where I was standing beside Marty's desk outside my office. And somebody asked me something. I forget what it was. And I didn't really know the answer, but that didn't slow me down. I went right into some profundity that I thought would stall the situation and maybe I'd go look it up later. And I went on and on, and I'm pretty quick on my feet and use my dazzling vocabulary. And when I finished, Dr. Hill was standing there for part of it, went in the office, and he came in and sat down and shut the door behind him. I never liked that, because when I heard the click, I was about to hear something that he didn't want anybody else to hear, because the deal was no criticism in front of others.
Okay, sure.
And so I heard the click, and I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Ben, you and I together don't know 99.9999999% of the available facts. Therefore, it is no shame to say I don't know. But if you care, but I'll find out." And that just I remember a feeling of release, because I didn't have to know everything all the time anymore. He freed me of that burden. So I was back down to my third grade education, which didn't include many facts.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, that's interesting, because I remember one of the typical, you know, business law classes you took early on in college, right? And I remember we had a judge, and he taught, and he goes, you go in the law libraries at a lawyer's office, and there's walls and walls of volumes. Right. But he says, no lawyer there knows 1% of anything that's in those books.
Right.
But they know, or they have people that know where to go find it. Because there's no possible way for any lawyer to, you know, when they show up in court in front of me as a judge and they sound incredibly brilliant, that's because they've had some junior people research it, taught you the attorney, and got you prepared for that particular case only, right?
And in their notes, Carson versus Phelps in 1954.
Exactly. Yeah. And that still was with me a lot of years later, because there is no shame. And I think you build that humanization of the relationship if you just admit, you know what, I've been doing this for 4+ decades, and that you got me on that one. I don't know. I'll find out, though, because I I think people instantly go, I respect that. That's fair. Yeah. You know,
as you know, people buy from people they know, like, trust, and with whom they feel safe. And that gives a big boost to the trust and for whom they feel safe, with whom they feel safe. Big boost in those two categories. Oh, he's not going to just make up something to get the sale. He doesn't know.
Right. Doesn't know. Big deal.
You touched on something earlier. Not only do they know more about you, as much, if not more, about your product than you do, thanks to the internet and artificial intelligence and Google and everything they can check, they also probably know more about your competitors than you do. When they went to look up your stuff, up came all the other people who do that or make that or whatever, and they checked them out too. So that may create some new objections, but at least you should be aware it creates new knowledge. You can't say we're better than all of our competitors, because you might hear, well, how come they have a 4.9 rating and you have a 3.7?
Exactly. But yeah. Oh, exactly. So if you're better, why do you only have a 30-year warranty and they have a 40-year warranty? Just curious about that one. Just a number. It's a number.
And I just made it up.
I don't know. I can do 50 if you want. I'm not going to be here. So it's 50 if you want it to be. What do you want? Right?
The other one that's a tip off to those is a Harvard study has shown anything that comes after a Harvard study is a lie. Right. Nothing wrong with Harvard. And they've done a lot of studies, but people quote Harvard and studies and so on. There's a great one that floats around. I'm just making up numbers. Only 25% of all sales are made on the first call, and 43% are made on the second call, and da da da, and the seventh call. So you got to keep going back as many as 7 or 8 times, and so on. And one day I was talking to two of my mentors, both gone now, Ray Considine, who wrote the great book, Waymish, Why Are You Making It So Hard for Me to Give You My Money? Which is a great question to ask any sales or marketing person. And Ray Considine, another dear friend. And somehow that study came up and they both just doubled over laughing. They had written a magazine article for a sales marketing magazine. I forget which one. And they sent it in, probably back then by mail. They sent it back in and the publisher said, this is a good article, but can you give me some more statistics? So they went to lunch and over a bourbon or two, they came up with 8% and 22% and 33%. And I've seen it quoted all over the world in different languages. And I always smile because Ray and Wade made up those statistics. There was no study. Yeah, but what they knew was sort of what was right. I mean, they were both sales pros, had been at it for 50 years apiece. So that's probably not too far off. I could come up with statistics, but I wouldn't put Harvard study in there.
Right.
Because I might get caught. I don't know if there's somebody at Harvard that keeps track of the number of times they're quoted. And it's just nonsense, except for the broad generalities. Right. Most salespeople, if it's a product or service of significance, don't close it on the first deal, presentation. That's about all that I can prove. Any other statistic after that? And we as salespeople, have you ever been interviewed on the eighth attempt to sell? How many times, blah, blah, blah? No.
Right.
And you don't know the answer because that's the way you keep track of your business.
Right.
But you could come up with a gut reaction, and that's what they did. And it's quoted all over the world. I must ask them that over 40 years ago when I discovered it was nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a great point because I just was thinking about a customer that I have right now, Ben, that I've sold for years now, and it's fasteners. And it was years there was buying from a competitor, and the competitor is pretty solid there. But I kept coming back, lunch, come to their open house, and it was like a year or two. So I don't know how many times, 8, 10, 12, 15 visits plus phone calls. And finally he says, you know what? Let's talk about really doing some business. He says, you have none of my business, and I've seen you 1,000 times more than I have ever seen the person that I'm giving all my business to. And I said, well, there's two ways. I said, either I wine and dine you and razzle dazzle you on the first call and you give me the business, or I wear you out to where if you say, if I give you business, Randy, will you quit calling on me? I said, so whichever way you want to go, I'm good. Whichever you like. I'm a customer service guy, you know. Something you said, Ben, before we wander off, which I know we will, you kind of hit on this, but talking about this, why do salespeople give up so quickly? Why do they do that? They know the statistics. If they're in sales at all, if they're brand new and young, maybe they don't know yet. I'll give them that. But why does an experienced guy or gal that's been in it at least a few years give up so quickly?
Laziness. And we have a lot of lazy people that are drawn to the sales industry because, frankly, it's not like being a heart surgeon where you have to go to college and then medical school and then 2 years being a heart surgeon, whatever the deal is. We get people like me. I was barely a high school graduate and answered an ad, said, if you know anything about marketing plans and want to make more money, dial this number. So I went with the Atlanta Journal in my hand, went into a phone booth on West Peachtree Street, dialed the number, and began interviewing. Bill Dempsey was his name. This is Ben Gay with Brown Gay Food Brokerage Company. Perhaps you've heard of us and blah, blah, blah. Now I'm interviewing him to see if he's worthy of hiring me. I was making $100 a week. This is in the early 60s, working for my father, and Brown Gay was not me. It was him and a partner, and the partner didn't like me. So I was even shaky saying I was with him. I was to call the office once a day to see if I was still with him.
Exactly.
And I saw a picture on the internet today, this morning, of a phone booth like I'm talking about. Walk in, pull the door shut behind you. And it always sounded like you were calling from inside a trash can. And I'm beginning to interview Dempsey to make sure he understands who I am with my 22-year-old high squeaky voice. And about two questions in, he said, Mr. Gay, hold up. I'm not the man standing in a phone booth answering want ads. Where are you? And I told him, he said, you're two blocks from my office, 1447 West Peachtree Street, Suite 300. I said, oh, that's interesting. He said, well, here's what's more interesting. Be standing in front of my desk in 10 minutes or never dial this number again. And he slammed down the phone. For you young people, we used to slam down phones.
Yes. And that's something, do we miss that or what? There was something great. Yeah, that irritation
click,
and just
click
take
doesn't
that
do
and
it.
Slam. No. Yeah. And then you got to do some muttering of words that we won't say here afterwards.
Yeah,
I spelled
absolutely. So Jimmy Rucker, my running buddy, the greatest salesman I ever personally worked with, high school friend and dear friend to this day, came around. We worked together. My father didn't know that, but I have face blindness. I don't recognize faces unless you're where you're supposed to be. I could pass you in a grocery store and go, hi, how are you? And the brain might go, oh, that's Randy, somebody. Huh. And that followed by Gigi, who was that? Because she doesn't have face. I also have directional impairment. So Rucker and I would wave goodbye at Dad's office in the morning if we even went to the office. Wave goodbye. He'd go one way. I'd go the other. And then we'd meet up and get in one car because I couldn't find my stores by myself. So I said, 1447 West Peachtree Street. Hurry, step on it. He said, what's the rush? I said, we're going to be rich. My theory was anybody who would pay for an ad to run it in a newspaper and then hang up on people who answered it, because I've run lots of ads, nobody called. Mm-hmm. And then hang up on the person who answered it, I figured had something going. Exactly. And that, I probably told you this, I went skidding into the office with a minute or two to spare, and I said hi to the lady. My name's Ben Gay. I have an appointment with Bill Dempsey at whatever time. And this voice behind me, heavy Southern accent, said, Ben Gay, that's a funny name. And I turned around, and I'm used to that type of thing. So yep, I shook his hand, and I said, what's your name? He said, Zig Ziglar. I said, with a name like Zig Ziglar, you're making fun of Ben Gay.
Exactly.
But he had answered only three people, two actually, answered that ad, Zig, me, and then I brought Jimmy along because we were tied together at the hip. So that's where I met Zig. That's how I went from $100 a week to $40,000 a month in 1965 dollars, almost half a million in today's money, part-time. Selling distributorships and cosmetics and holiday magic. Because it took me a few months to get it, I learned the stuff. If you'd given me the closers back then, I would have eaten it alive. What I got was some scripts and told to memorize them, which I did after I was warned that if I didn't memorize them, I couldn't come to the meetings anymore because I was depressing other people. I said, what do you mean depressing? Bill Dempsey said, you never bring anybody because you haven't learned the recruiting script. I can't put you in front of the room to do the opportunity meeting because I know you haven't learned that. And then you don't bring anybody, so you don't really need the closing scripts. But unfortunately, other people see you here all the time. They assume you're making money, so they put their hand up, which was one of our codes, come help me, I need help closing this. And you go over. And you didn't recruit anybody, can't give the meeting, and haven't learned the closing scripts either. So you blow off their prospects in addition to not bringing any yourself, which is the reason you haven't made a penny in this business in 6 months. And I said, really? Well, how do we solve this problem? He said, you go home and learn those scripts. Come to my office, stand in front of my desk and give them. And he said, you too, Rucker, word for word. Wow. Did that 10 days later or something, walked in with, I think it was five prospects or five buying units, husband, wife, one, single person, one. And they did the meeting like they were supposed to. I had them because I learned the recruiting script. They gave the meeting like they were supposed to. Then the end of the film, it said, turn to the person who brought you here and ask how you can get started in holiday magic. Lights came up. You're supposed to get out your legal pad. And for the first time in 6 months, I knew the script, the closing script. So I started drawing circles upside down on the legal pad. And four out of five bought instantly. As best I remember, one needed to get financing or something. I quickly learned to have that solved, too. I had an old banker friend who would finance anybody I sent to him. And so I got five out of five. In that one meeting, I made more money than I was making a year working for my father full time.
Wow.
So I was hooked. And I'd learned that lesson earlier. I won a citywide contest in Atlanta selling Krispy Kreme donuts that helped put that gold dome on the Capitol that you see when they shoot from Atlanta. That was gold from Dahlonega, Georgia, and the school kids all around Atlanta sold Krispy Kreme to make money to buy gold to put the first plating up there. I'm sure it's gone now, but it's still gold colored. And the way I did that was my father said, if you can go out and sell these things, and I said, what do you get? And I said, I don't get anything, but I think there's a prize, a bicycle or something. So I beat everyone in the city selling Krispy Kreme donuts and won a red Columbia bicycle because my father said, if you're going to go out there, let's do this professionally. In the South, they all have screen doors. He said, so you stand where they can see you, can see somebody's there, your shoulder or whatever, but they have to open the screen door to see who it is. And back then you didn't fear opening the screen door. Right. And when they do, hand them their Krispy Kremes and say, here's your Krispy Kremes. Will one box be enough? And almost everybody, I don't remember anybody saying, no, thank you. Krispy Kreme donuts in the South, that's a food group. Right. So, you know, they go, yeah. And is that enough? Will that be enough? Well, if you got them, get me two or three more boxes while you're here. That was all I did. Bap, 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 stand aside. Here's your Krispy Kremes. Beat everybody in the city and won a red Columbia bicycle. And more importantly, I was hooked. My dad was a salesman. Everybody he knew were salespeople. I'd sold Christmas cards and, you know, fundraiser type stuff, but I never got anything out of it. they gave me a bicycle because I learned I've never counted it, but a 15-word script, whatever it was. And I said, there's got to be more of this. And then not too many years, I used a similar thing, selling lawn mowing services. I had 20, 25 kids working for me in the growing season. I went door to door and got jobs, went back, inspected the jobs and collected the money and then gave them half of it. People said, well, why would they work for half? Because their half was bigger than their whole. Because my script and inspection and everything was planned also. How much is it going to cost? We'll mow the lawn and you pay us what you think it's worth. So people that would have paid us five paid 10. Mm-hmm. We bid one job where I would have charged them 50. It was a huge overgrown thing around an old mansion. And he gave me 100, which back then, that's 1,000 today.
Yeah, yep.
He gave me $100 cash. So I knew how to do it. I just didn't apply it to this new business. I broke the rules. Once I put the rule back in place, off and running. And life has never been the same. Traveled all over the world, met kings, queens, princesses, drag raced with the king of Norway through the streets of Copenhagen.
I love that story. Go ahead.
A friend of mine, Dwight Broughton, looked over. We're sitting at a stoplight, looked over, saw the king of Norway. He drives around by himself. And I said, how's that possible? Where are his bodyguards? And Derek said, he had whatever the population of Norway is. He said he has 15 million bodyguards. Hmm. So he didn't need another set. Anyway, he nodded at him. The king nodded back. The light changed and boom, off we went at high speed through a block or two of Copenhagen. So I've met, and then a moment ago, we were talking about people not reading books. I've met kings, queens. I was attitude coach for the astronauts, Apollo 15, 16, 17. And taught at San Quentin for 5 years and Lompoc for 6. But at San Quentin, I spent 9 hours sitting in the cell with Charlie Manson. He couldn't come to the class. Charlie didn't play well with others, but he wanted to meet me. In his cell, there was one book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And I said, Charlie, what an interesting book selection, because I'm looking around. It's the only book he had, not even the Gideon Bible, which almost all of them had because they gave those out and they wanted to look religious to the guards. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, that's my Bible. I couldn't have built the Manson family without it, which is interesting because it's like guns. You can use a gun to protect your family and be a hero, or you can use your gun and go rob a bank. How to Win Friends and Influence People, Carnegie's great book. You can build the Manson family and kill whatever number of people they killed, or you can change the world with it. Same with the closers. Every book I sign that goes to shipping, every book I say as I'm signing, I say a quick prayer over it. Lord, please put this in the right hands and help. And by then I know who it is because I got the material in front of me. Help him or her be successful. But put in the right hands means there's powerful information in there that could be used dishonestly.
Right.
It's like that. I love that commercial I see on television about shingles, the skin rash thing.
Yep.
But I'm 55 and the voice says, shingles doesn't care. I eat a good diet. Shingles doesn't care.
Right.
Well, the closers doesn't care. But I do. Mm-hmm. And How to Win Friends and Influence People doesn't care. And Charlie didn't either. Unfortunately, he was an evil, evil person. Hmm.
And that, I've listened to that story and I love the story about that. And I think we talked about it in person. We was all together in West Sacramento, old Sacramento, whatever we call that area, which we need to do again. But, that had to be about one of the more surreal moments to walk in that cell and see that guy sitting there. I mean,
it was, but I don't want to overdramatize it. I'd already taught there for 2 or 3 years, and I had people in my class, no guards around. That was the deal, no guards. Mm-hmm. And if the guards came into the room, they had to come in with their first name, not Lieutenant so-and-so, and sit down like any other member of the class. And the class was sort of rough. It was an encounter type thing. Scared Straight, you may have seen. Okay. Rahway State Prison, where the convicts mm-hmm. brought in kids that were about to go the wrong direction, scare right. the hell out of them. Well, in this case, People Builders was young white millionaire comes in on Friday night and scares them. Not that they were physically afraid of me, but I would tell them how life really works, how they wind up here, and why back in those days, 67% of you, when you get released, will be back in 2 years. Now, would you like to avoid that? That was the recidivism rate. Would you like to avoid that? People Builders graduates, after we had a couple of years, so we had some statistics, our recidivism rate was 5%. Wow. Down from 67. And since we're with you and Wes, I can wander around. Let me tell you what the secret was. And it's the secret of every seminar I give, only one of which has the right title. I do a public speaking seminar. Come spend a few days with me and I'll get you speaking and up and getting better and so on. All the other ones I've taught, mind dynamics, leadership dynamics, mentoring dynamics that Dr. Hill and I were going to do, and public speaking and People Builders, all of them. The secret is public speaking. Listen up, people who are watching or listening to this video, public speaking. And the reason I use that, even without telling them they're in a public speaking class, and the reason they find themselves at the front of the room, much to their surprise, talking to people and a couple hundred people at San Quentin we had every night, every Friday night. And that was an encounter class, as I said, from 6 Friday night to 6 Saturday morning. Only thing in the prison that operated that way. The warden, Red Nelson, had said, whatever he wants, he's going to make my life easier. So you do what he wants, short of jeopardizing the safety and security of the prison. Right. So, but it was public speaking. And the reason that when I meet somebody casually, you know, I'd like to do what you do, but I'm afraid, and I'll say, of public speaking. They say, yeah, well, congratulations. It's the number one psychological fear, most psychologists say, ahead of death by fire, which is the reason it pays so much, supply and demand. If you and I had this conversation in front of a room, it'd be $15,000 minimum plus the right to sell books. And so on. So, and the reason I can charge that, and a lot of people charge a lot more, is because people are afraid to get up there and do it, so they hire somebody else to do it. The reason I have a closing rate of 86%, and I've had it for years, is I'm a good public speaker. I'm confident. So giving a little presentation to one person, what I always wonder about is what happened to the other 14%? Why didn't they all buy? I'm good. I only sell good products and services, mm-hmm. things that I would buy for that much or more. How did I miss those 14? But I seem to have bumped my head against the ceiling. I haven't moved it from 86% in years. But well, the secret is public speaking. So, and the confidence that comes with it. So if you're in selling and you're not already a good public speaker, and the way I can tell that is, do you give public speeches and are you paid for them? If the answer is no to either one of those, you're not a public speaker, is join Toastmasters. It's not the greatest public speaking thing. I teach one of the best in the world, but you can't come to mine, probably. It's 30 maximum in a class, and I only do a couple a year. But Toastmasters is in your town. They're doing it now. And what the service they provide that can change your sales results radically is they get you on your feet in front of a group building confidence. When I first got into public speaking because of Holiday Magic, I had to. I said to Zig Ziglar, who was already, he wasn't making a lot of money yet. He did in Holiday Magic, but in his general life, he was reasonably well known in the South and not making a whole lot of money, but he was good. I mean, really good in front of a room. I said, how do you do that? And Zig said, get in front of anybody you can get in front of. Do it for free in the beginning, then bump your prices up. First time I asked for money, it was $300. That was years ago, but that would be $3,000 today. So I've gone up significantly even from that. But you see, get in front of people. And then I followed his advice. I didn't know any better. I spoke. He said to people, Ben Gay would work a traffic accident. And I said, only if there were two people there, because I only work with two or more. And he would laugh, but that's how I got good. I got up in front of people. I bombed. I got up in people. Oh, first time I got in front of 400 or 500 people, I had an emotional breakdown as a result of a joke. Jimmy Rucker and Bill Dempsey held up a sign with the punchline to a joke I had heard just that morning or the day before. It just cracked me up. So they got up with the punchline. It was Henry, Henry, Henry. Won't bore you with the story. But they unrolled it in the back of the room. I dropped to my knees and had to be carried from the room in hysterics. But here's the good news. That inoculated me to being embarrassed in front of a crowd. Yep. I was scared in front of a crowd. I was getting over that. But embarrassment, there was nothing you can do to me on stage, nothing, that I haven't had that or something worse done, and I got through it. I might look over at you and nod and wink, but you're not going to get anything out of me. I've had Henry, Henry, Henry stuck in my notes. Open up the notebook. There's Henry, Henry, Henry. Or the latest joke I've heard. Or your fly is open. Or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Can't get me. And therefore, you can't get me in a sales presentation. Because I have overcome man's largest fear, public speaking. You overcome that, everything else shrinks. So do it. You didn't come here to get a lecture on public speaking, but I'm telling you, if you are not already good, getting paid to do it and doing it frequently. Dale Carnegie, I sent both of my sons, I have four actually, but the two sons I'm closest to physically, I sent them to Dale Carnegie. And the other son who came to one of my classes at Lompoc, same thing that I taught that class, but I figured with young Ben the Fourth and Josh that they wouldn't listen to me because that's dad.
Right.
So I hired Dale Carnegie to tell them what I would have told them, and they had miraculous turnarounds in life. So, and nice. if budgets are a problem, Toastmasters.
Good advice. Great advice. I mean, that's amazing. So, as you've been incredibly kind with your time, and I always appreciate it. And you know, this is number 7, I think, of you being on. You know, my hope has been the consummate pro you are. By 10, we might get this right.
I've given 5,000 paid speeches when I quit counting. 5,000, I'm guessing, free ones, and I'm still trying to get it right.
Yeah, well. So, and I think, you know what, I think that's perfect, because the goal should be to continue to stretch yourself to where that's the elusive goal at the end of the rainbow, right?
Is
keep wanting to get better, right? But Get one right sooner or later. So you're spending some time of your own every day, 2-3 hours doing some mentoring and coaching, even more than you used to do. Let's and I'm sure we'll finish up with a story or two when we get done, because I got a couple I want to hear. But tell us about the mentoring and coaching. You don't have a lot of time for it, I know, but tell us about what you're doing there.
Well, Gigi, my lovely wife, mm-hmm. if any of you know me from other places, you know Gigi. She's sewn to me emotionally at my hip. Gigi runs a jewelry business, but she sits when she's in the office. She's not today. When she's in the office, sits about 10 feet away from me. So she hears what's going on and I hear her stuff and so on. One day, as I finished up a call with somebody, she said, why don't you charge for those? And I said, well, I really like doing them. She said, but you say that something for nothing is worth nothing, and treat it accordingly. Why don't you try charging for it so maybe they'll take it more seriously? I said, well, that's a good idea. I'll give that some thought. She said, Dr. Hill charged you how much again? It was $50,000 a year, which in today's money is $500,000 a year up front in advance. He didn't even live through the third year I paid him for, which if anyone's listening from Napoleon Hill Institute, you owe me $25,000, as best I recall. But she said, and you're always quoting him. You must have paid attention. I said, well, I was paying $50,000 a year. Yeah, I paid attention. And she said, then do them that favor. Mm-hmm. So I started charging. Mine is a little less, $2,950 to start, which gets you 10 hours of time, which can be used a minute at a time or an hour at a time or what have you. But we keep track of it by the minute. So roughly that's based on 10 hours over whatever period of time. I have one guy, we're about 5 years deep in his $2,950. Oh, really? Yeah, because he uses me for, he's read the books, he knows what, he's been to some seminars. He said, so I use what you taught me all the time, but I only call you when I have a question, specific question. One time it was a career move, go from this company to that company. I knew enough about both companies to know he was probably in the wrong place. So he called me up. He says, Ben, I'm ready to make a decision. Should I stay here or go there? And I said, go there. He says, thank you, and hung up. Somewhere on his ledger, you'll find a call, 1 minute. I'm not even sure it lasted a minute, but I was proud. I remembered to write it down. And whatever 1 minute is out of 60, out of $300. So we operate that way. But I'm doing basically what for other people, what Dr. Hill did for me. We didn't have charts and graphs and assignments and everything. He just came and sat in the office. First year was paid for by William Penpatrick, the head of Holiday Magic. It was a company check. I didn't know how much it was until the afternoon after I met him. I was signing checks, and I signed two $50,000 checks to Dr. Hill, which was, in today's money, $1 million in one day. $50,000 of that was for me, and $50,000 was for a mention calling Bill Patrick one of the five greatest living Americans. Bill was a great guy, but he was in the book, quoted by Dr. Hill, for $50,000. That was the price for being one of the five greatest Americans in the world.
That's wild.
So Dr. Hill made $100,000 that day doing that. And then next he came out, he said, I'm coming out. He used to love to ride in the Learjet. And I've sent it for him probably 90% of the time. So I think he would make up reasons to come see us. Although it didn't come off any ledger, it was $50,000 for the year. And he'd make up reasons to get on the Learjet, have it come get him in Columbia, South Carolina, and fly him to California. But when he got there, he would just sit at the end of the table. He might say, is there anything you want to talk about? We might go to lunch. He stayed at the house. I probably learned more at the house than anywhere else because we're both sitting around in our bathrobes, relaxed, nobody's putting on airs. And he would just talk to me. And he was old enough to be my great-grandfather then. Yep. So like all good great-grandfathers, you can learn a lot just by asking a question and shutting up. And that's what I did. That's how I learned not to dither. That's how I learned that taking action was terribly important. And that's how I found out, getting behind the scenes, that people are people. Dr. Hill was not a saint. He couldn't walk on water. And Earl Nightingale, who also worked for me, the Strangest Secret famous recording, Earl didn't like Dr. Hill. He thought his teachings were simplistic. And maybe they were. I don't know. I'm a simple guy. but they didn't like each other. And I'm thinking, I got two saints working for me and they don't like each other. How is that possible?
Exactly.
You know, cute Earl Nightingale story. He was on the Arizona December 7th, 1941, in Pearl Harbor. It was blown out from under him, and he was one of 19 Marines that survived the experience. Years later, and I was conceived on December 7th, 1941. My father always said there were two terrible things that happened that day, Pearl Harbor, and I was conceived.
Oh, boy.
But we're on San Francisco Bay, and I wasn't paying as much attention as I should, in about a 45, 50-foot cabin cruiser and a trough, so like a reverse swell, a trough caused by a freighter going by. Snuck up on me. I was talking to somebody and down we went. The bow went down probably 30 feet, hit the bottom, shot up 30 feet the other side. And when I looked up, Earl, who'd been standing on the bow drinking a bourbon and soda, was missing. Dr. Hill behind me in the lawn chair, I heard the lawn chair hit, was on his side, but he was alive and where I could find him. So Earl became my problem. And so I cut the engines as soon as I was sure I didn't have another trough coming, cut the engines, ran up front, and there was Earl hanging by one leg, wrapped around a stanchion, upside down with his bourbon glass. I like to tell the story. It still had colored water in it. That was probably from San Francisco Bay, but it still had something in it, in his hand. So I pulled him up and I said, Earl, I'm so sorry. My God, I don't want to be known in history as the man who killed Earl Nightingale. And he said, Ben, pardon my language, it's slang, but he was entitled to use the slang. He said, Ben, if the Japs couldn't get me at Pearl Harbor, Ben Gay isn't getting me on San Francisco Bay.
Oh, man. You know, I'm so glad you brought that story into that, because that was the one I was going to ask. That's one of my favorite stories of the thousands that I've heard you tell. The day you thought you killed Earl Nightingale, because, you know, as we've taught before, I was a big follower of Earl, too. I mean, I got his, for anybody that's, like, younger than us, when I got him in the cassettes, and I remember opening up that, was it Conant Nightingale, right? I think it was
Nightingale Conant.
Nightingale Conant.
Yeah, on this record that Bill Dempsey gave me that day, Lloyd Conant, I don't know if you can see that or not.
Oh,
there,
yeah, okay. Yep.
He was only a distributor for Earl's back then record.
Yep. Wow. Yeah,
it's that was Stranger Secret.
So good. I mean, I enjoyed everything there. And besides that, I mean, you know, one of my two favorite voices, Earl, was just, besides just a great guy, and I didn't know him, but just listened to him,
he was.
His message, but, and you know him, knew him personally, but, you know, the other guy that's got a great voice, we just had on the other day, Scott McCain, you know, another just, not only a great guy, but a great voice, just,
yeah, I have got a voice like today. I sound deep because something is in the air is bugging me. But I've always thought of all the professions I took up without a voice like Earl or your friend or Paul Harvey. Mm-hmm. I was taken to lunch by Earl one day in Chicago, and he said, we're going to have lunch with a friend of mine, and walked in. I didn't recognize him. I'd never seen a picture of him. And I said, hi, I'm Ben Gay. As we walked into the restaurant, he said, I'm Paul Harvey. And I thought, oh, great.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to sit between two of the greatest voices of all time and try and keep my questions to a minimum because I sound like Minnie Mouse.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Ben, thank you again, as always. You know, I can speak for Wes. We appreciate your friendship and everything you do for us. And, you know, folks, the closures, what's up on the screen? The closures, great, great series. And you kind of touched on it. And I'm going to bring it up because it forces Wes and I to get to work, is you've honored us with the ability to write closures, whatever it is, if we ever get around to it. Yeah. Right now, we think it's number 7, but it could be 46, you know.
Yeah. Get going. All right. Do it. That, by the way, on the bottom of the screen isn't where they go. I think that maybe it is. But okay. what I know works is stores, S-T-O-R-E-S dot eBay dot com forward slash all one word, Ronzoni Books, R-O-N-Z-O-N-E-B-O-O-K-S. I think I got that right.
Well
there,
done.
There you get the best pricing, free shipping, which you don't get at my website, free shipping. And it still is signed, dated, and comes with our unconditional lifetime money back guarantee.
Love it. Love it. Tell you what, when we drop this, we'll make sure that gets on the on all the posts so everybody knows, because it's perfect. Well, Ben, any parting words, my friend?
No, just if you're a salesperson, I assume that's a high percentage of the people who right. are listening, or an entrepreneur, get it. I'm always being asked, you know, if you had your life to live over again, would you? Well, the parts of it I just soon not live over again. So I'm always slow to answer that. But my standard answer is I'd get serious sooner. I started making serious money when I was 23, but I could have been making serious money when I was 18. I went to a neutral bio meeting, which was the forerunner of all the multi-level companies, or one of the forerunners. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't, my sponsor didn't show up. The person who invited me, that's typical. So I didn't have anybody to capture me and try and talk me into buying, which I would have. It was exciting looking. And so a guy named Earl Schoaf, Jim Rohn's big mentor and a big deal in NutriBio, came over to me. I'm just a kid in a cheap sport coat looking lost. He said, young man, can I help you? And I said, well, so-and-so invited me. His name was Sonny Snipes. Sonny Snipes invited me, but he doesn't seem to be here. He said, will you come with me? And he took care of me the rest of the night. Mm-hmm. So I met a legend and didn't know he was a legend. Yeah. Wow. But if I'd been bright, and if Earl Schoaf had chosen to waste some time trying to close me, I could have started then. Mm-hmm. And I could have started in that 6 months that I wasted not learning the scripts. And I came down with salesman's disease later in a period of my life. I don't have to worry about it, income, because I can always make more money. So I don't have to invest it and save it like I should. And I am therefore, I have no way of figuring it, but I am several millions of dollars lighter than I should be. Because I didn't get serious sooner. I
love that.
So I would encourage you to do that.
Great advice. Get serious sooner. Ben Gay III. Love that. My friend, thank you so much again, as always. And you take care. Tell, hey, and give that, give Gigi a big hug from us.
I shall.
I'm going to be out, I think, in September again next year, I think, for a board meeting for a national association I'm involved with. And if I do, I will see if we can get together again.
If you come out here, Sacramento, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
We will get together.
Absolutely. Done.
You're not bringing Wes Wyatt with you, are you?
I don't know. We can think about it. You know, it's okay. So it's a challenge. He's been on a program, so he doesn't eat my food as much anymore. That's my always biggest thing is.
Oh, yeah. Bring him.
Yeah,
while he's on the diet, bring
that's it. Because otherwise, he eats my food and drinks the last wine. So it's just like a double. It's a double thing that I almost can't. It's almost a friendship breaker. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But well, again, Ben, thank you so much. Appreciate you, and good blessings to Gigi, and we'll talk soon, eh?
Super. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye bye. All right, my friends. I got nothing else to say. Ben Gay. That's it. That's really it. I'm loving what I do and doing what I love, and I never. That's probably the millionth time in hours. I mean, not that much, but that I've talked to Ben one way or another, and I always learn so much and appreciate the knowledge and just everything about Ben. Man, he's the real deal. So buy the books, listen to anything you can find that Ben does, and just keep doing what you do. Love to do what you love, live it, love it, own it, because we only go around once in life, right? And go make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.